We've reached that time on a Thursday. We look to the north. You can find his work in the same place, just a new name. Now, NBC Sports Northwest. Still, Channel 737 on your Xfinity system. He's talking Ducks and more. And along with the rest of the fans of the Northsiders breathing a sigh of relief, follow along on Twitter. The handle's at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
Coach chilling, man. What's up?
Well, you know, occasionally I do this radio show and I invite people on and we talk about sports. You up for it?
Wait, you get paid to do that?
Yeah, could you imagine? 18 years, twice a month. They still haven't figured it out.
That's highway robbery.
And I appreciate your support.
I'm saying the fact that you get to sit around and talk sports and get paid for it.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir.
That's a great gig. That's a great gig.
I'm telling you, twice a month, I check my U.S. bank account. I said they paid me again, and I feel like Jesse James, like I just got away with something.
That's awesome.
All right, so top of the hour, Kershaw, Quintana. By the way, last night, Madden hadn't used his closer since Washington. Calls on him for a six-out save, gave up the homer to Turner, throws about 30 pitches in the eighth. So what was going through your head confidence-wise as he took the mound in the ninth?
I actually felt pretty good. He doesn't give up many runs, and so when he gives up his one, that's usually it. When those are few and far between. So I actually felt like he wasn't going to give up another run. My biggest concern, though, was that, well, you won't have him for the next night. To me, it's really depressing that you spend that much money on your roster, you make all the roster moves you make, and you don't have a setup guy. Like, so you can save your clothes next night. So that makes me worry about tonight, because what they have a lead tonight, and they get late in the game, and you got to throw gas on the fire instead of Wade Davis. So I don't know.
All right,
but
you know,
as I told you before, though, gave him a 5-year window to win a title. They won it right away, so I am not stressing. I'm too blessed to be stressed.
I like that one. T-shirts on the way. I got one more question about last night. I saw what you said on Twitter. That call on the Granderson strikeout that had Oklahoma fans saying that's worse than Duck Sooners in 2006. So the replay shows it's a strikeout. They can't use replay. The umps gather, say he foul tipped it. Madden, supposed to be the smartest guy in the room, drops multiple F-bombs, gets tossed. So did he need to kind of get out there, get Davis some extra rest? Or, dude, you're the manager. You can't get thrown out.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he had to go ballistic to the point where he got thrown out. I mean, you can make your point. They're probably going to give you some leeway and not want to throw you out. So just make your point and just do it in a way where you don't get yourself ejected. I wasn't appreciative of that. But what I don't get is they called a strikeout.
Right.
So how do you reverse it without any visual evidence? And then the guy just came out and said he messed it up, obviously. So what did he see that possibly messed it? Like, I don't understand why you would reverse mess it up. It's one thing if you called a foul tip, then you had a conference and you couldn't see it, and someone said, let's just stick with foul tip. But they reversed the call based on the guy thought he heard it. You guys thought he heard the nick of the ball in the bat? What? Like, what?
No, that was weird. And, you know, they had that little umpires Mensa meeting out there.
Yeah. Like, there's no way they're reversing this, right? And then sure enough, they did.
And there you go. I think Pac-12 fans are used to those kinds of calls.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to Duck football. So you can get mentally ready for Game 5 in Kershaw. I'm just going to shelve that, and we'll get to the Ducks. So, general question. You've gotten to travel to some pretty cool venues. You've seen Natty's, Final Four. You've covered the NFL. So, this is at the Rose Bowl. So, while you've been there for Rose Bowls and UCLA games, where do you rate watching a game at the Rose Bowl as far as places that they pay you to work?
Ooh. That's a tough one. You know, it was the first time I was there, it was cool, I guess, being there because it is what it is. but I wasn't that impressed with it. And I kind of felt badly that I wasn't that impressed with it. I'm not impressed by the old stadiums. I think when they're dumps, they're dumps. Is that bad?
So maybe a little person. Bit.
A little bit. So, like,
now I know what you mean.
Like, to me, Arizona State remodeled their stadium. And I thought they did an amazing job with it. I thought it looks really good. So, to me, I'm way more impressed with that. I mean, I guess you're impressed with the history and the nostalgia of the UCLA, of the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, I can appreciate it that way. But just because it's old and been around a long time and has history doesn't make it a great stadium.
Yeah, the first time I ever went, the only time, was when Oregon played Wisconsin, and they dropped the shuttle off, and I was talking with these guys, and all of a sudden I'm outside, and I'm like, oh, the Rose Bowl. This is pretty cool. But like you said, outside, when you see that and the scene, it's beautiful. Inside, it's like, you know, I went to Yankee Stadium when it was 109 years old, and I was like, they may need a new one.
Exactly. So it was cool to be there, probably, and you probably thought, oh, this is awesome. Beirut played here, blah blah blah. But then you're like, yeah, it looks like it's a fire hazard. It's gonna fall down on me any second.
Yep. Like Matt Court, talking with Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest. So I want to get to last week in the passing game. Because, you know, I know Burmeister's making his second start. Bizarchek was hurt. Crosby was hurt. That's a really good Stanford secondary. They fell behind. So from what you observed to what the guys said, why did it seem that, like, they almost refused to throw the ball down the field or on different patterns? Because I got to tell you, I was really confused.
They lost faith in the passing game, and they were just like, we're just gonna try and run and see if we can have some success there, and they just abandoned it. And to me, that was the most interesting aspect of the entire evening. You know, it's one thing to have a bad night passing, but it's another night to just say, you know what, we're losing by a lot, but we're not even gonna try and throw to get back into this. We're just gonna run the ball and just run the clock. That's what it seemed like. So I went back and looked at the previous low, or that was the least amount of points, 7, since the 16-0 loss to UCLA in 2007, who we got to Dennis Dixon went down. There's a pattern there, obviously. And even in that game, that game was 16-0, so they were still in it till, you know, very late. But they threw 39 times. Now, they only completed 11 of them. They had three picks, and for like 130 yards, so it was not a pretty 39 pass attempts. But Bilotti kept calling passes. Chip Kelly kept calling passes. They kept throwing the ball to try and make something happen with Cody Kemp, Brady Lee, and Justin Roper. So for Taggart to just bail the way he did, it was very interesting. Personally, you know, I think that when you know it's over, let's just sling it, man. Let's just say, okay, let's go through all the plays that we like, that we think he can do well, and let's use this as a live bullets coaching clinic. And let's just go. And they didn't really do that.
No, they didn't. Now, you wrote about something I actually talked about in the post game. You know, I see a defense that plays with heart, you know, that they stuff Stanford on fourth down to keep within 14 points. Then the offense gave it back. They forced another three and out. And I keep using the term going to the well, and it's going to run dry. So any logic to, no matter how hard they play or what kind of effort they give on defense, if the offense does nothing, that's just got to wear you down, no?
Oh, there's no doubt. And of course, no one's going to say that because it sounds like you're throwing the other side of the ball under the bus. So internally, you don't want to say that, but it's a mathematical fact, so they're all thinking it. But the bottom line is this is not anywhere near a dominant defense. And, you know, a lot of people thought they're in a non-conference. Oh, my God, they look amazing. They look amazing. And it's like, well, they really played anyone, and they gave up the points in the second half against Nebraska. So when you have a defense that's pretty young still and you got a new coordinator and you're okay, not great, you throw them out on the field for 37, 40 minutes with no, you know, support from the offense in terms of points, and they're going three and out in 45 seconds, whatever, you're going to give up a ton of points. It's inevitable. Now, we saw in the ASU game that the defense was vulnerable. I mean, they gave up 37 in that game. Even in the Cal game, even though the defense played pretty well, I think they had 7 sacks or whatever, and they got after Cal's quarterback, Cal still put up 24. Now, imagine that game where the offense threw nothing. Now you're giving Cal back the ball probably in some good field position. You're getting in with a couple more possessions. Even that 24 easily becomes 34. And so with a better team, you give them possessions and possibilities. Now, 34, now they're putting up 49 on as well, too. So there's no doubt it's having impact on the defense. This is not a great defense. It's a decent defense, and they're getting exposed by an offense that can't do anything. 17 points in two games, I think, is the worst two-game stretch in, what, since the early 90s or something like that. So something's got to change this week, or UCLA is going to put up 60.
One final thought for Aaron Fentress. Let's not be all downers. You know, we know they lost Herbert. The defense is a little better. Burmeister, two full games under his belt. They do, in fact, though you wouldn't have known last week, have Nelson and Mitchell back.
UCLA's were they there?
Rumor. I think I saw Nelson get a touch.
Oh, yeah, Nelson got a false start.
But UCLA's defense has been weak, especially against the run. So any reason to be optimistic that all of a sudden they could find a bit of a passing game and compete a little bit better and have a shot in this one?
Okay, I'm going to put on my positivity hat. Okay, so.
There you go.
If you're looking for a way for your team to win, and trust me, I do this every week with the Bears. I'm always trying to figure out a way they can win. All right, so I know all about trying to, you know, sugarcoat everything. Okay, so. UCLA's run defense, abysmal. 300-plus yards game, 128th in the nation, last in the Pac-12. Your running game's still pretty darn good. So if you can really hammer them with the run, and they ran really, pretty well against Stanford, if you can hammer them with the run and pound them and just use all three backs and just get after them and not commit penalties, you end up giving, say, just the minimum of 300 yards, which is what they're giving up, UCLA, what you're more than capable of getting. If you give him that, Burmeister, you have a chance to help him immensely. Put him in second and short, as, you know, on the 40 instead of third and 15 inside the 10 because you got penalties. You know what I'm saying? Give him great down and distance situations, and then he maybe this is the week he flips the switch and goes 12 for 19 for a buck 45 in a tub and runs for one, and maybe just one turnover. And then you have a chance, if you're running the ball really well, you get 350 or whatever. Now maybe you might be looking at 37 points. Because it can happen like that when you're running real well. We all know that.
Yep.
Now, if your defense can get a couple turnovers, which you haven't been able to do in the passing game, only one interception to Pac-12 play, you can just get a couple. Maybe you steal this game 37-30, 37-34. That's the only way it's going to happen. It's a lot of ifs, but it's not impossible.
All right, but we're ending on a positive note, which for your sake, we're hoping carries over to Quintana and the Cubbies tonight. So
true, but do you want my prediction on the Oregon, or should we just stay away to keep it positive?
Yeah, let's leave it at that. We could always be miserable. he's Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest these days on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. AF, always a pleasure. Travel safe to Pasadena, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, man. Later.
Take it easy.